task we've been at this week is looking at the scriptures at places that describe these feelings among the people from the scripture that match the same feelings that we have all the time. And by that way, helping us better to define for ourselves what kinds of feelings we're feeling when we're feeling them. We got into some, at the end of yesterday's, things were left a bit hanging, a little bit, and it got nice and lively, which I like a whole lot, and probably am nasty sometimes and just drop comments in for the sake of the screaming and yelling. So the more we argue, the happier I am, actually. So don't be afraid of that if we have differences of opinions and stuff, because that's how we all learn, isn't it? Yeah, that's how we all learn. And everybody's opinion is always valuable, which is one of the gifts of conversation in the gospel. We might all disagree, or we might all agree, but everyone's opinion has value. So does anybody else have anything else to say about yesterday's stuff about anger and hatred? Any more comments on the Soviet Union? On appropriate or inappropriate hatred, or whether hatred is even ever appropriate. That was one question that came up. Whether one can hate a system but not the people that are perpetrating the system. You notice you got a dose of it at Vespers last night as well, when Matthew 5 and 6 got read again in
How
Vespers.
How did you pay to have that?
No, I didn't. I got asked. What did we talk about today? I told them, and so that's we had that read. Yeah.
Nancy, very briefly, somebody touched on capital punishment, which
yes.
is something that disturbs me considerably. And to me, it does not seem as if it falls into the category of hatred or anger. But in the final outcome, protection for the rest of humanity. And yet it's a terribly drastic measure, so I never can quite decide how to feel about it.
Well, it doesn't say in the scriptures that you can kill to preserve humanity or preserve people. It just doesn't qualify that at all, does it?
I don't think so. I mean,
you just don't kill for any reason. You can put people out of harm's way without killing them. You can give them a chance to redeem themselves.
I sometimes think killing them is giving them a break.
That's a good point.
Put into solitary confinement or some such. I think that.
Let them think about what they did. And many times I would think enough of that would change their mind about how they treat other people. But I still don't feel as if it falls into the category of hatred or anger.
Although, there are, like, if you, when there are very, when people are being tried for serious crimes in a public kind of way, you know, the one sometimes you'll see if there's been a particularly hideous murder or something, you'll hear a lot about it every night on the news or something like that. And very often where the anger and hatred stuff comes from the family of the victim. And I think we've all seen on several occasions where perpetrator, although found guilty, is not sentenced to death or not given as strong a sentence as the victim's family feels the person should have. And I think at that point we see a great deal of hatred and revenge, hatred and anger. And like their desire, for example, to have someone die who caused one of their loved ones to die. That seems to be the whole eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth thing that Jesus actually counsels us against in the Sermon on the Mount. Seems to be a very strong part of the common feelings of anger and hatred in human beings. That this happened to me, or, you know, so that person better get it. So I think, Dottie, that the capital punishment issue, although maybe the punishment itself, as it is specified in the legal codes, the issue itself, I think, may very well be fraught with those emotions of anger and hatred. I don't know. I'm just, yeah. Could be.
On a societal level, I think there's a link to fear, too, that it's nice to have scapegoats, in a sense, people that you can say,
right.
Well, if we get these people out of the way, we'll be safer. And there is that myth of security. And I think our punishment of criminals helps us feed that that security feeling.
That's a good point. Over here, we have
something too. Exactly what I was thinking was a lot of these things we talk about, I think we're acting out of our own fear. And we kind of tend to think that it's easier to be angry or it's easier to be hateful than it is just to be fearful.
Yeah, the anger and hatred and things like that are more active emotions than fear, are they not? I mean, if you're angry, you can rant and rave and pound walls and do stuff like that. Unfortunately, people do a lot worse things like that when they're angry. They hit their family members, they shoot people, do things like that. So it is. Fear tends to be a less active kind of emotion, except for maybe in my particular fear reaction is to throw up at that point activity. So you know, everybody's got their own activity, I think, that relates to their fear. That used to be true when I used to not be able to eat. I've gotten over this now. I don't think my anxiety about preaching or leading worship is a little less, but I think it's probably good. A little stage fright, huh? You know, it's okay. But keeps you on your toes. Don't get too complacent. But I did, in fact, my internship supervisor used to be very concerned about that because I'd make a point of not eating for 24 hours before I had to preach, but I'd also get dry heaves. And those started getting closer and closer to the worship hour. you know. And when Dave would see me coming out of the bathroom, you know, across in the church office, you know, at 10 minutes before worship, he just started to go, we've got to do something about this. Anyway, it got a lot better as it went along. I understand from many of my colleagues that there are that they have other kinds of reactions before preaching. So I think fear is a pretty common kind of thing, and there is some activity that does go with it for all of us. Sometimes, for some people, fear is totally crippling, though, is it not? I think one thing I wanted to do, and see, you made it help us make a nice transition here, both of you, so we can move along here from anger and hatred to fear. It all gets mixed up together, though. I was thinking it might be sort of helpful to maybe write down some things about fear just to get some different things on the thing. And I think we should make a distinction. I'd like to make a distinction, and I'm arguable at this point on... now see if this stuff works. Between what we might just call fear, well, that's what we're talking about, right? I can't write, so none of this is going to be legible at all. And over here, let's make a distinction. I'd like to make, how many times have I said this now? Now I'll tell you what it is. A distinction between fears and phobias. Okay? Because I think that that's helpful. I don't want to put down phobias as being any less important than fears. Because people who are phobic, who are afraid of small spaces, afraid of open spaces, afraid of water, afraid of
preaching,
right? That goes here. all that stuff, you know, all those kinds of things, which are very common and very true for people. I'm not trying to put it down, but I think that for our uses here, because a phobia may be something you live with your entire life, right? The same thing, and you deal with it. A fear might change from time to time. That is, you know, you'll have some shifts. And also probably in our fears, we'll probably find a lot more common human experience than in the phobias. So we'll put phobias over here. Let's list everything. And the one thing, other thing that I was thinking would be important, is that either one of these things can turn into terror, right? Mm-hmm. Which is probably the extreme side of fear. It is the extreme side of fear, of terror. So just start yelling stuff out here. Either one. Oh, let's do fears first, some fears.
Failure.
Unemployment.
Rejection.
Insecurity.
Do that a little more, Glenna.
Insecurity?
More, the fear of being insecure or insecurity itself is a fear. Okay, I get it. Okay.
Making a fool of ourselves.
Death.
Heights.
Excuse me?
Heights.
Okay, that goes under phobia.
The unknown.
Pain. Okay, that can do with it. Do you agree that those are the same thing? You two better get together with it. I mean, you keep coming up with the same things. We have some kind of magic going on here. Okay.
Getting old?
How about aging? Will that do?
Theft.
Excuse me?
Theft?
Rape.
Storms? Like thunderstorms? Like thunder and lightning and stuff? Mm-hmm. That goes under here.
How about fire?
Fire?
That's
a
phobia.
That's a whether you're cold.
That can sort of go both ways. And hold it, it's a phobia. It's a terror. It is, and it's awful. I lived here when the garage burned, which is the fire scene you see in the orientation session in the thing. You never forget it. That's all we can do is stand there and watch it burn. You know. Okay, some others?
I had some real fears with one pregnancy for the health of the child.
Okay. How about just fears for children in general? Will that do?
Yes.
That's fears of parents regarding their children. Yeah?
I don't know how to state it, but a fear of repetition of past mistakes, fears, happenings, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know how to put it down. You need to write that all
reruns.
Out.
Reruns.
How about repeated behavior? Is that one way?
No, good.
Okay.
Nuclear war.
Yeah, nuclear war.
Poor Bill.
Fear of being judged.
Behavior. Hold it. Nuclear war. Poor health.
That could go under
aging.
Nuclear war?
No.
Poor health?
Health.
Oh, yeah, for hypochondriacs? No. Okay. I think she means something different than that then. And yours was? You just said.
Oh, being judged.
Being judged, yeah. What else?
Being old and helpless.
Okay, I think we've got aging and
okay,
poor
health.
And mm-hmm. Or being helpless?
Yeah.
Okay. Helplessness. What else?
Having accidents in cars.
Accidents?
Speaking in front of groups.
Yeah.
Fear of the dark.
Okay, now we're sort of getting into phobias here.
Yeah.
So let's do some of those. Dark. Heights.
Water. Claustrophobia.
Water, falling.
Airplanes.
Going outside.
Huh? Outside. Big space, open spaces, that is.
Open spaces.
Small spaces. Medium sized spaces.
Bridges.
Yes, that's a biggie, you know.
Elevators.
No. There's a difference between a fear of crossing a bridge and a fear of heights. They're related. But this is a real serious phobia that I've dealt with three people that are afraid of bridges in my ministry.
Elevators.
It's different than heights. Elevators, that's close. That's small spaces.
Yeah.
Well, that, is that okay? Or is somebody, is there really a phobia of actually going up in the small space? Really? Or down? Yeah, Dorothy? Yeah,
before you,
after that? Okay, we'll put elevators down. Elevators.
Escalators.
Total
offices.
That's a Holden Village phobia, the fear of tofu. We'll call it tofubia.
Spending money.
Huh? Spending money, okay. Who did have money? Some people do it the other way. What?
Snakes.
Spiders.
Anything
crawling. Gee, it's so nice to be in such a healthy group. People? Just, yeah, people or others. Yeah. Xenophobia.
Medical offices.
Strangers. I'm going to add strangers in there.
Oh, no.
What?
Medical offices.
Medical offices? Like the doctor and the dentist and all that stuff, yeah. Fear of... Yeah, that's pain, too. They're both places. Let's just put it over here for now. We're running out of space anyway. So. Huh? Oh, well, this is a medical office. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, sorry. Okay, any others you want to put on here?
Cat.
Cat?
Cat.
Like meow? Yeah. Yeah, or just slash animals. No, yeah, there really is one, people that are really afraid of cats. And dogs too, but animals, but there's a real, the cat one's a real biggie for some folks, yeah.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate, cats are so wonderful. I'd like to add a couple to this one.
Forgetfulness.
Being forgetful, okay. Where do you want that?
Fear?
Okay, let's add some in here and get a little more specific for our time. I think probably under fears we should include AIDS as a specific category, don't you think? AIDS. Yeah. More than just illness.
Any disease.
Yeah, I'd like to add in the fear of abandonment, which I think is pretty universal.
What about loneliness?
Yeah, okay. And that goes along with abandonment and loneliness. Loneliness.
Could that be a phobia, too?
Yeah, I think it could.
How about eating? You know, overeating, undereating?
Well, the fear of getting fat, yeah. Not one I suffer. Fat. That leads to disease, mainly bulimia or anorexia nervosa. Well, we can add to this as we go along, but I think that's fairly detailed. I've read something through that fear in the staff Bible study. We were talking about some of these things, and you know, there's all different ways of experiencing these phobias. And I mean, I'll tell you all my fears here. I mean, there's nothing like confession here. No, but one, it's a funny kind of a fear, which I have found that other people have. In fact, a bunch of us were talking a couple of weeks ago and found that we all had this same one. It isn't a fear of heights. I don't mind being in high places. But it's the fear that you're going to jump off.
Yeah.
Right? Anybody else have that one? Yeah, there's just that split second when you're in a high place where you think you're going to do that. And you don't do it. But, and the fear comes afterwards thinking, what if I do it? I mean, it's not a fearful experience when you first think of doing it. And it isn't suicidal or anything. It's just, maybe it's just, I don't know what it is. What it would feel like or... Whether you really think you should be at the bottom, I don't know. You know, it's a real funny feeling, but one that I've had all my life, and just, you know, jump. I'm not afraid of getting over the edge and looking over and that stuff, but just that split second when you think you might.
Oh no, I can do it.
What?
I'm just thinking about my phobia. I'm not sure. What it is? Because I love going up in hot air balloons. I have no problem with that, but when it's walking around the side of a mountain. Way up high, looking down for a moment, just like, oh,
no,
I'm gonna jump.
Yeah, right, okay, yeah, right. It's real funny, yeah, it's a real funny kind of feeling. Anyway, I think that we can see from this that our fears are pretty universal and cover a great deal of territory. I think another one we could add to fears, which
fits. Can you? I hope you can read my scrawl a little bit. That another one too is the fear of somebody put being foolish. But what about also the fear of being found out? Getting exposed. That somebody is going to come up to you and tell you all the bad stuff you have ever done in your entire life. Right? That's a pretty common one too. And we're all really good at covering up. A real common human thing. Part of that fear of being found out that maybe, you know, maybe somebody's going to...
Being judged.
Being judged and being made foolish or any of those things, but I think it sort of includes a whole lot of stuff. I think that all the issues in our time of things like poor health and aging and all of that are really... Another one that was brought up at the staff Bible study was the fear of... that's increasingly, and some of you that are among some of the older people here would say, catastrophic illness. The whole financial things caught up with that issue in our time, which is a really a big one, where you're aware of the fact that no matter how well you've taken care of your finances, it doesn't matter how wealthy you may be.
Would that come under poverty, fear of poverty?
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had money over here, but there's, you know, sort of the whole helplessness, poor health, being poor. A lot of you that were raised in the Depression, I'm sure, have lived with that kind of fear your entire life. You know, just sort of is part of who you are, that you're going to make sure you're taken care of well enough and your family is, so that won't happen again, you know.
How about the fear of forgetting or not getting things done in time?
Yeah, that's the forgetfulness we put down there.
There's also the fear of success.
The fear of success, yeah, that's a real good one, too. We're running out of space here a lot. Aren't we? The fear of success goes up here with the fear of failure, because, see, if you don't succeed, you can't fail. And some people avoid success like the plague by failing all the time, and that becomes the way in which they live.
Well, that can be a phobia, too.
Yeah, it can. Sure.
Just stress.
Afraid of getting stressed?
No, I said...
It causes stress.
It causes stress. Huh?
Yep.
So that causes illness.
That's right. So you're in real trouble if you're terrified of getting ill, which, of course, stresses you out, which, of course, makes you ill. And I think probably we could find that kind of vicious circle in almost any of these kinds of things. There's also... Go ahead.
So I was just going to say that's a problem with mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a family member who is mentally ill, the rest of the family are so afraid that they're going to become mentally ill. Sometimes they can.
And that would be also, they found, you know, there's an awful lot of work in a lot of groups now on adult children of alcoholics. Some of you may be involved in some of these groups, where any kind of codependency situation in a family can literally create, which is true of the mentally ill, which is true of alcoholics and other chemical dependents, where any kind of, where the family literally, out of their own fear for what may happen, because of the other person's condition, whether to themselves or to the person, literally supports, that's what codependency means, supports the person in their illness. And then when in adult children of alcoholics, when they grow to be older, when they get to be adults, even though they're not alcoholic, will portray a lot of the same. Somebody's probably a real expert about this in the room, but we'll have those same kinds of behavior patterns that the alcoholic did. So there's a lot of problems that our fears cause, not just for ourselves, but for everybody around us. There's something that's escaping me here where I should be going.
Nancy?
Yeah, good, somebody talk.
I think I recently heard that... medicine has come up with a way of they can now predict who's going to become an alcoholic.
Yeah, there's some new study that they can, at least for in the family trait things, that they can, some genetic thing, I believe, yeah. Which may or may not be helpful. You know, sometimes the information, that was where I was going, thank you, and there's always something that clicks on, is that the information we get increases our fear. For example, take children in our society. I think we would all agree that it is a very good thing that issues of the abuse of children, whether through violence or sexual abuse, that the fact that they are becoming more open is a good thing. You know, that this is being talked about. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, and that also our children are getting information at a very young age about these issues. But on the other hand, what is happening? We're increasing the fear and anxiety in our children about what might happen to them. It also decreases their trust level for adults they do not know. You know, so the more information we have, the more our fears can increase.
But I think that really depends on the kind of information you're giving kids.
I agree.
I want to be
yes,
real clear about that, because I mean it's an issue that's real close to my heart, as far as particularly with sexual abuse, is that most sexual abuse does not come from the strangers.
No, it comes from people in the family, and I understand that.
And so, I mean, I think it's the kind of information you're giving kids, and it can be given in a positive light and not a way that creates fear, but to be able to teach them very constructively that their bodies are their own and that nobody, whether they know them or not, is allowed to touch it unless they want to.
Right. And I agree with you, but at the same time, I tell you that all information about all kinds of things can, I mean, I'm just saying it can increase our fears. I think
confine the information to your children to just what you want them to know.
That's right.
They hear it from other children, from other outside sources.
Television, all kinds of things that increases fear of different things. I think everybody knows of at least one story of some child who has reacted fearfully to a situation because of something they saw on television, which was not a true story even. So, Jan.
I find that even listening to the morning news, that I shied away from that because my children want to know what all the murders and what all the, you know, where did that theft happen, where did that murder happen, where is that storm, and it really concerns them.
Mm-hmm. I think we had an incident, a situation in Seattle this year where there were a series of arson fires in the neighborhoods around where the church I serve is. And the fire department, I feel, the Seattle Fire Department did an incorrect thing in that when there were four fires on one night and an elderly couple was killed in one of them, they said this was the first outbreak. This was not true. Then later, they talked about how there had been as many as, at that point, 13, I think, when they announced it, 13 arson fires within about a month period in basically a fairly close geographical area. And there were children who were terrified. I know there were at least two in our parish that had some very serious problems with that information. When I go to bed tonight, my house is going to get burned down. And you tell them their family, whole family just got killed in a plane crash, they go, yeah. I mean, there's just no, no emotional range there. I mean, if it's good or bad. But of course, they'll believe the plane crash, but even once the $3 million is in the bank, then the banks will get robbed or something. You know. It's just, there's this terrible kind of, there's actually, you know, it's a terrible kind of fear that sort of is built into the culture. And not just of the Norwegians, but I think of a lot of Scandinavians, so and the German people as well. And I think that it's sort of that what's going to happen is going to happen, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's a real fatalism, and I believe fatalism is contrary to the gospel, because what we hear from the word on the cross is that God has intended to do some things about things, right? And even with our fears, remember yesterday, I brought up that thing about what we pray for. You know, that maybe we're praying against what we believe. Just like, I've got you online here. What we're praying against, what we believe, by always praying only for physical illnesses. And that, because what we do believe is that God does heal our hearts and emotions on a regular basis. And should be praying for that more. Excuse me.
I was going to say now, if you touch a hot stove, you can't pray that I'll touch that hot stove and I won't get burned.
Mm-mm. No,
so
no.
You got it. What about the sword swallower?
We suffer from what we do.
That's right. We do suffer for our actions. We also sometimes suffer because of other people's actions. Right. That's right. And sword swallowers, well, God has made the mind to be a wonderful thing. And some people can use it that way. So let's get into the scripture a little bit with some issues. Looking at some of the fear things in here. And one book I want to recommend to you, it's some ways a horrible book, but worth, I mean, horrible in the sense of horrifying, Okay, it's called A Horrifying Book. It's a wonderful book. And have you read this, Kit? Anybody else read it? I don't know. It's called Text of Terror by Phyllis Tribble, who's an Old Testament scholar, very well-known one. She calls it literary feminist readings of biblical narratives. Don't let the feminist word put you off. All she's anyway, all she's doing is lifting out six stories from the Old Testament that are literally tales of terror. And I'm going to talk about two of them, about and in this case, all women who get forgotten. They're some of the forgotten women in the scriptures. They have very long stories in the scriptures, but we don't hear much about them. And it's in the bookstore, and you can take a look at it. It's a really very fine book, and like I said, it is kind of horrifying because of what's there, but it gets into some of the issues that are present for us in our own society, especially around issues like rape, assault, abuse, violence, things like that.
Who's the author on that?
Phyllis Tribble. Tribble. If anybody a Star Trek fan here? The Trouble with Tribble?
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, got it? The little furry creatures, you know, that keep multiplying? Right. Right, everybody, oh, okay, everybody's seen that Star Trek episode, right, okay.
I'm not Trekkie like you are, but...
Okay, so I want to look at the various kinds of, some of the fears that go on. In the scripture we can find, I'll look at a couple of these stories, not right in a minute, but we can find lots of things that happen. Somebody mentioned the fear of surrounding our children, protecting our children. Think of all the stories... in the Old Testament particularly, that have to do with people doing really fearful things for the protection of their children. Can you think of one from the beginning of the book of Exodus? Moses. How can you imagine what Moses' mother felt like when she took that little baby and put it in that basket and stuck it in the river? Those of you that are mothers, can you imagine how terrified she was? I mean, that's an awful thing to do. I'm not a mother, but I get sort of creepy crawly thinking about that.
Well, I'm sure it was not a choice. She didn't have any choice.
That's right, she didn't have any choice, but
she didn't
still. That's right, so there's choices. She had to make a choice. You do this one, but still, what's the fear? That a child's going to die. That's a real common human fear. And that can go on no matter how old your children are, I would think, at least if my mother's behavior thing indicates. But that, you know, that kind of motherly concern, which can really turn into, fathers, you have it too. I'm not trying to put you out. But sometimes you end up making a choice based on fear. And that's one. And so the story of Moses in the beginning of Exodus 2 being put in the bulrushes is a wonderful one when... you want to read more about that feeling, that fear feeling. And I think there can be some comfort in knowing, well, somebody else has gone through something like this. that, you know, that feeling might even be just sending a kid off to college. It might not be as severe as life or death. What?
Stop to Narnia.
Stop to Narnia, right, yeah. We'll require that all... all mothers at Holden Village read Exodus 2 while sending their child off to the awful swamp of Narnia. No, it's wonderful. But so that's one of them. Another one is on the other side of things is I had a long conversation with a woman this week up here who was going through something that some women do who have not had children about the sort of fear of what that means for life. And things like that, and especially in this woman's case, it was very important to her. And think about the story of Hannah. Now, Hannah's fear got pretty extreme, didn't? Don't you remember that Eli thought she was drunk? She was praying so hard. She was bound and determined to have a kid. You know, Hannah did. Also, one thing, Hannah, is another important thing about Hannah, is that in the marriage between Hannah and Elkanah, that's one of the best marriages you'll find in the scripture, okay? Obviously, Elkanah had a great deal of respect for Hannah. So if you read 1 Samuel chapters 1 and 2, that's really good. On the other hand, you know, Hannah was so excited about this, she gives the kid back. You know, But if you read the story, you will know that she was also real involved in the life of her child all the way along. But she's expressing a very human fear of a woman, isn't she, at the beginning of that? In great detail and with great passion. Read in 1 Samuel 1, about that. And she, just the fear that she would not be able to have a child. Now, which in her case would even be more extreme, because her identity had to be tied up in having a child. A barren woman in Israel was a nothing. I mean, women were next to nothing. There's a passage in Numbers that lists a man's property, and it starts with if he owns land, and then it goes to cattle, sheep, sons, daughters, then his wife down here somewhere, in terms of worth, value, you know, monetary value and things like that. So a woman not to have children is awful. And that, of course, gives the whole Abraham and Sarah story. So I want to look at that for a minute, too, some of the fear there. This is one of the ones that Phyllis Tribble talks about. This is in Genesis chapter 21. You can look at that. This is the story of... And this is fear, somebody put into a fearful situation because of somebody else's fear. And... Genesis chapter 1, beginning with verse 8. And now Sarah has had Isaac. And if you remember back earlier, because Sarah could not have children, she had that fear, same as Hannah. She wasn't worth anything then. Abraham had had a child with Hagar, Sarah's handmaid. And so we start with this. As the child grew, it said, this is Isaac, and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, playing with her son Isaac. So she said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. Sarah is scared, isn't she? She's scared that Ishmael's going to get a little piece of the action here. And that Hagar's son's going to be, who was probably young and beautiful, you know, and Sarah was quite past it. So
Sarah was beautiful, do you remember?
Yes, when she was young. Some time passes, but yes, Sarah was very beautiful. When Abraham went to the Pharaoh and had to deal all that stuff and pass her off as his sister and all that stuff. But this is, she's 90 years old now, you know. And you have to remember that Abraham, what is it Paul says about Abraham in Romans, that Abraham had a child? I mean, think about the faith of Abraham. He even had a kid when he was... And he was 100, almost dead, Paul says. Or something like that. I can't remember the exact phrase, or was pretty close to dead. Anyway, so, I mean, Sarah's pretty past it. And Ishmael's playing with Isaac, and she doesn't like that. I would guess that the kind of fear of who's playing with your kids, what's going to happen to them when they do, that's pretty common human fear. Okay. And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son, but God said to Abraham, be not displeased, because anyway, but so what happens down there? So down in 14, so Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And when the water in the skin was gone, she cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down over against him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, let me not look upon the death of the child. Think how Hagar's feeling right now. Think of the women that we try and support in Africa whose children are starving. You know, think of their terror in that. And as she sat over against him, the child lifted her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him fast with your hand, and I will make him a great nation. And what great nation came from Ishmael?
The Arabs,
yes, right. Trace her thing a bit. Another thing that you know is important about Hagar is that Hagar ends up journeying, actually, all the way to Egypt. A wife for Ishmael from Egypt and all that, but see, she goes from Abraham, who's in the Promised Land, back to Egypt, and then they end up back in the Promised Land, then back in Egypt, and then back again. I mean, that little, the wilderness wanderings, all that stuff, that little piece of ground gets back, they go back and forth over that all through the Old Testament, folks. I mean, it's
still
just
do.
Still do, yeah, right. Trying to get it all, you know, right, and it's still wilderness. Anyway,
that's part of the whole conflict, though.
Sure it is. So, it's interesting. So think of Hagar's terror. She does that. I've just move along here. Let's skip to some Psalms and talk about some things. The Psalms are good for your phobias. They're good for your fears as well. If you don't like water, or if you don't like boats, the Old Testament's for you. The people of Israel hated the water. I mean, really. I mean, why do you think, you know why the story of Jonah is so shocking? Because Jonah was so bound and determined to not go to Nineveh and prophesy that he even got on a boat to go the other direction. The people of Israel, hearing that story, would have gone, he did? He was desperate. They don't. So that's why in the Psalms you find a lot of images about fear, particularly having to do with water coming over your head. There's a lot of drowning images. I hope nobody is afraid of water, and I'm making you sort of sick here. But, you know, of all the images of water closing over your head or whatever, it's full of it. Start in Psalm 69. It's a wonderful example. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire where there is no foothold. No, you know, just see there's a whoosh, just about to go under, nothing to stand on. I have come into deep waters and the flood sweeps over me. I am weary with my crying, my throat is parched, my eyes grow dim with waiting for my God. And then there's enemies around and all kinds of things. So Psalm 69 is a real goodie. We're going to flip through these quickly. Psalm 74. This has to do with the fear of losing everything, you know, being abandoned by God, all the lands being torn up, everything's happening. It could fit in with a whole lot of these. Psalm 74 is that one. Psalm 77. This is a great one, because the psalmist is in such a stew and so afraid of all kinds of things that the psalmist cannot sleep at night. Is this an experience no one here has had? So 77 becomes a good one for when you can't sleep at night because you're afraid of something. Psalm 88 is another one about all kinds of fears, all kinds of things, of death, of the anger of God, of being abandoned by God and by people. And Psalm 102 is another one. That has to do with, once again, being abandoned by God and other people. Okay, let's turn this around for a minute and think about what we're called to do around fear as Christian people. What's a really common greeting to people in the New Testament? Fear not. Happens all the time, doesn't it? Yeah. What's the first time you hear it?
Angels.
Before that? Mary. Mary, I mean, now that's terrifying when an angel comes and lands in front of you when you're out in the garden or whatever. I mean, yeah. You know, fear not. Right? The angel says. The angels say that at the to the shepherds. And where else? Where's another really important spot where that happens?
At the tomb.
At the tomb, yes, right. What do they say to the disciples and to Mary Magdalene? Fear not. Jesus says it to Mary Magdalene. And that's really important. There's a sense in which God in Jesus, one thing that's happening is that Jesus, by sharing all of our fears, allows us to live life without fear. One of my very favorite passages in the New Testament about what happens for us in the gospel is in Luke chapter 1, beginning with, starts in verse 67. This is when Zechariah gets his voice back after John the Baptist is born. And first thing he does is sing this great hymn to God that we call the Benedictus now. But it talks about all the things that the Messiah will do. And we look at Luke chapter 1, verse 72. says that what will happen for us now to perform the mercy promise to our parents and to remember God's holy covenant, the oath which God swore to our father Abraham, to grant us that we, being delivered from the hand of our enemies, might do what? Serve God without fear. That is a great promise. That is a great promise. Because what does fear do? Fear is a crippling emotion, is it not? It's something that belongs to all of us. We are, you know, I don't think it's possible for a human being to go through life without being afraid. They would have to be so numb to everything. What?
Some of that is good, though.
Yes, some of the fear is good because it makes you alert and all that. Right. But the kind of terror that blocks you from functioning is not what God intends for us. And especially not over against God. The one thing we learn about God and Jesus is that we don't have to be scared of God. Okay? Got it? Don't have to, you know, we can serve God without fear. And a lot of the really crippling parts of fear have to do with the fears of getting done what we need to be done. I'm just going to roll on here for a minute because Ginny Haugen in Matins this morning read you a passage from Galatians chapter 6. She started in chapter 6, verse 2. And this verse, the Galatians chapter 6, verse 2 reads like this. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I want to share with you one little thing about fear, which I think is an important way to sort of get through it for people. Because we literally are called to bear one another's burdens. Now, if I have a task that I have to do, the burden in front of me is not the task itself. If it's mine to do, it's mine to do, and I'm capable of doing it. Right? Right, okay, that's pretty clear. I may be blocked from doing it, whatever it happens to be, by my fear. So the burden is not the task itself. The burden is the fear that stops me from doing it. And there's a wonderful English author who was a friend of C.S. Lewis's called Charles Williams, and he's written a whole bunch of real strange novels. But they're great. They're just great. They're all in the library here, and they're in the bookstore as well. And this one, Descent into Hell, talks about what he calls the doctrine of substituted love, which is based on this thing. And his point is, which I think is a true one, is that, I was going to read a bunch from there, but we don't have time this morning, that the burden, like I said, the burden of any task is not the task itself, but our fear of it. And to bear one another's burdens is to literally take the fear from somebody else. Like if I have the task to do, I can sit down and pray with Joanne and see. It's not her task, so the fear is not going to be hers. But she could take the burden of my fear onto her, and then I'm fine. Now, the problem is that both Joanne and I have to be willing to do that, which means breaking down a lot of pride and ego. Now, Joanne could do that, but I'd have trouble. And, right? I thought I'd just be nice here, Joanne.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway, the problem is, and I would like to give you one example of that happened right here at Holden Village, and any of you that know me know that I'm fairly skeptical of miraculous religious experiences, so I'm just saying that so that you know this is a true story. Because I'm sort of, let's deal with what God's given in the earth. Orth, are you going to say something?
Just getting rid of a fly.
But what happened was, and it was based on this little thing of bearing one another's burdens. What I want to tell you is that your fear is something that you can work through and even get rid of and other people can carry for you. That's the point. Is that we had there was a gal in the winter community here in my second year as pastor here, who was a wonderful, delightful woman who had terrific insights about the gospel. And in the winter, Vespers is shared by the whole community, and I really wanted her to do a Vespers because she just had so much to share. It was just wonderful. And she'd do it in discussions and stuff, but it needed to be part of the proclamation of the community. She was one of these people who was absolutely terrified about standing up in front of a group of people. I mean, beyond belief. She said, she first gets itchy, then she gets a rash, and then she gets hives. You know, I mean, really bad stuff here. And so I finally convinced her to do it. I suppose that was nasty on my part. Oh, you'll be okay. But so she sat down with another woman named Teresa, who probably hasn't been afraid of anything in her whole life. I'm not putting down Teresa's humanity at that point, but a very strong woman. And they prayed together, and they both of them were very, had that kind of vulnerability too of their faith, which allows this too, which is important, and for all of us. And they prayed that when Thea did her Vespers, that Teresa would carry the burden of her fear. Well, this all happened right up here in the dining hall here at Holden Village, and I was sitting next to Teresa. Thea got through the entire Vesper service without even itching once. Teresa broke out in hives. She was sitting next to me. They started all over her arms. It was incredible. I was going, nah, nah. Do we want to deal with this right here at Holden Village? I don't know. And she broke out in hives. She said they weren't painful or anything, but they were there, you know, hives. And they started right when Thea started talking, and when she said, I'm in, they went away. God has created us wonderfully to help each other. And the abilities of our minds and hearts to deal with what we have to deal with is incredible. And so I think, you know, I like this. Bear one another's burdens. We can carry each other's fears so that all of us can get on with the tasks for the world, huh, that we're called to do. And so I think that's a really important stuff. So, you know, we can use scriptures to help us define and describe our fears for whatever they might be. We can double or treble this list, right? Right. And
See, look what that did to your faith and all those people there.
Oh yeah, it was great. Yeah, I mean, I'm convinced this can happen.
To strengthen us.
Yeah. Yep. To strengthen us, each of us, and with each other. I mean, the thing is that when you're fearful, you don't need to go hide in a closet and say, "Oh, everybody's going to think I'm awful because I'm so scared." How many times everybody done that? No. Nobody ever does that. Yeah. It's not true. You know, you can get out there and say, look, I'm scared to death. Down here and then up there. 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
I was just going to say that, just to add to what you're saying, that sometimes a person is alone with fear or they're doing something and there isn't someone to share the fear with. And sometimes I think it's a matter of going on in spite of the fear.
Yes.
And going on in faith with the fear still existing. And I think one of the most powerful passages or sections in Scripture for me for doing that is the last part of Romans 8. Romans 8 is a wonderful chapter in general, but the last part of Romans 8 where it talks about nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. That to me ties into when we're told, fear not.
That's right.
Sometimes we have the fear and we can't just let it go. And we need to go on in spite of the fear. And if we can remember that God's love is stronger than the fear, even though we still might be afraid, but we can go on because God's love is even stronger than what we're feeling.
Yeah, and the fear is not going to kill you, folks.
That's right.
Right. You might get killed by what you're afraid of. You know, fear is legitimate.
But that's not the last.
But the fear is not going to kill you. Laurel.
We had time to go into the cause of all of this fear. What is the reason? What is the cause? I've been afraid many times, but I mostly can trace it in my own case. Most of my fears of embarrassment or this or that or that is really basic in my pride.
And some
basic
of...
in my pride. I don't want to be hurt. I don't want to make an ass of myself. I don't want people to look at me. And I don't
yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, that is. It's all of that stuff. And that's an important thing to do, is to look at all that stuff and do it. Yes. But yeah, we need to get into the reason up there and then.
Yeah,
then,
okay, almost dovetailing into what was there over there. I think the one passage that comes back to me continually is that perfect love casts out fear.
I was just going to get to that too,
and
here too, right.
One of the things that with my children and working with them is in the morning before they leave for school, that we do almost a liturgy type thing where they are surrounded in the perfect love, that they may go out in that day without fear.
Yeah.
And it's tremendous to watch their courage or their trust level. I mean, we talked earlier about, you know, fears that children have, and some of them are very legitimate, and yet I don't think we have to instill fear in our kids, because I think as Christians we have that power, the perfect love, to also entrust in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a simple question. In view of your experience, do you not believe in miracles?
Oh, yeah, oh, I do. I do believe in miracles. Yes, you heard it here. I do believe in miracles. But I'm probably still more skeptical about them than most people. Okay, that's part of who I am, and we deal with it. Norwegians believe in miracles. They still exist as a country, you know. Okay. Just two more things before we.
Hey, Nancy?
Yeah.
One of the things that helps me is the phrase that I kind of repeat to myself once in a while, that I am a child of a king.
Well, you're not forgotten, you know, the thing is that you are, I mean, Luther had a thing, you know, just saying, I'm baptized, they can't do a thing to me. You know, that's it. That's what it gets, yeah, fear of water, oh no. Wait a minute, I've got two more things. Laurel mentioned 1 John, and two things there that are important. It says, by this we shall know that we are of the, this is 1 John 3:19-20. By this we shall know that we are of the truth and reassure our hearts before God whenever our hearts condemn us. For God is greater than our hearts, and God knows everything. And that's an important thing, that God is greater than our hearts. So when you're afraid, that kind of phrase, you know, does it. And the fear isn't going to kill you. You keep saying that. Then the other one, she mentioned that perfect love casts out fear, which is in 1 John 4. So one of those verses down there. I can always, it's like not good at verses. The other thing to remember is in our fears that Jesus has been there before us, right? Think of Gethsemane. You want terror? Read about Jesus in the garden. Is abandonment, which I believe is probably the most common human fear. Of all kinds of, there's all kinds of ways in which we can get abandoned. We were saying this morning at the staff Bible study, talking about the fear of older people becoming very ill or having to be in a nursing home or something like that. And the way that gets said often is, I'm afraid I'm going to be a burden for my children. Whereas probably what's really being said there, I'm afraid when I do get sick, my children will abandon me.
Well, how many of us on that list you could write in terms of abandonment?
Yes, abandonment is very common. But think,
your list behind you there.
Right.
How much that's really
abandonment. Abandonment, yes. What does Jesus say on the cross? My God, why have you abandoned me? Basically. Forsaken is abandonment. Why have you abandoned me? Think of it that way. Jesus has been there for us. Complete abandonment so that we'll never be abandoned.
Because he leaves us with the promise that I will never leave
you. I'll never leave you. Yep, that's right. That's right. And that's our promise. We're always with God. We're always being held onto there and stuff like that. So when we get into the fears of life, like I said, like in the shoes pointing out too, they're not going to kill you. And Eva pointed out here that sometimes our fear is good because it makes us alert to different things. I mean, it's a healthy kind of emotion as well. It can get out of control and become terror. And even at that point, God doesn't let go, right? On that note, we'll go drink coffee and listen to guitar music. Oh, yeah.